Hello friends, I hope you're all good. Today I want to talk about the toxicity of the self-care and wellness industry and how it can actually make you sick. Let's define the term wellness first. The term wellness has been popularized in 1959 by Dr. Halbert L. Dunn, who combined the words well-being and fitness together. This laid the foundation for a new health-oriented social movement. In 1949, the World Health Organization defined health as a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely as the absence of disease or infirmity. So the idea of wellness kind of fell into the zeitgeist of that time. The concept of wellness became a lifestyle that targeted well-being, fun, and physical fitness. The term wellness is also widely used for marketing purposes. It is not regulated, so basically any product can be marketed as beneficial. Due to exploding costs of the US healthcare system in the 70s, American scientists promoted new concepts of health and well-being that were based on the individual responsibility of one's health. Donald B. Ardell defined wellness as a form of well-being and happiness based on the factors self-responsibility, nutritional awareness, physical fitness, stress management, and environmental sensitivity. In other words, wellness can be also described as a harmony of body, mind, and soul. So this definition does not sound that bad, does it? A life that is focused on physical well-being, in which the individual has a responsibility for their own health, in itself is not a bad concept. It can be beneficial. And a definition of health that is not simply focused on the absence of illness, but on a holistic sense of well-being, I can only support. Because that is also my idea of health. That is also why this podcast is called How to Feel Good. Because I believe that health correlates with feeling good. So what is problematic about that idea? Why do I feel the need to make an entire critical podcast episode about it? Of course, I support the idea of feeling well, as well as living a mindful, health-oriented and responsible life. But unfortunately, this idea has been turned into an industry, which has led itself ad absurdum due to its orientation towards profit. And I believe that this world is now causing more harm than good for the consumers. As an osteopath, in a way, I am part of all that. It is my job to help people to feel better, in themselves and in their body. But what you probably don't know about me yet, because I often don't talk about it, is that I am also a yoga teacher. Technically, because as of right now I don't teach anymore. And there's a good reason for that, because when I remember my time in the yoga world, I get a sour taste in my mouth. And I want to use my experiences in the yoga community as an example for you to highlight the problems of this wellness industry. So for the sake of this episode, I put yoga just as a part of wellness and mix it a bit together. So I have worked in a yoga studio in Frankfurt, and this studio has some wonderful teachers and classes. Sometimes I still recommend it to my patients. But as a little microcosmos, it is quite a good reflection of the yoga world. Yoga can mean something different for everyone. For some it is simply a hobby, for some it is a sport, and for others it's a lifestyle. In this case, it is more than just moving your body one or two times per week. It becomes a life philosophy and, in a way, an ideology. And then it affects other parts of your life, your worldview, your mindset, your diet. So far, this is not a problem, because nothing is bad about mindfulness, peace, and healthy food choices. The problem is that yoga has become capitalized. The entire yoga industry is profit-oriented, and capitalism is always related to accomplishments and competition. So the focus has shifted away from well-being and towards harmful extremes. What am I talking about concretely? In the yoga world, there's an extreme pressure of competition and performance. There's a distinct idea of right and wrong, and you can never be yogi enough. Interestingly, this is always about superficiality. What do you eat? What does your body look like? What clothing do you wear? What funky poses can you get your body into? How much do you meditate, and where was your last retreat? It is never about what do you feel, what do you do with your life, how do you see the world, where do you come from, what do you need? It is only about your external appeal. If you want to be an elite yogi, you have to be white, extremely slender, ideally close to underweight. And if this is not your natural body type, that's your problem. Then you have to achieve it with restrictive dieting. You live a minimalistic lifestyle. You don't need much except your collection of 150 euro sports bras. You eat vegan, gluten-free, ideally with a lot of raw foods, or keto. Of course, you're histamine-free and you drink tea. Coffee is poison. You regularly go on fast to cleanse your body and soul and to recover from your stressful life. You fly to Bali at least once per year to participate in a yoga retreat. And there you are surrounded by like-minded people and can compare yourself even more to them. After this amazing vacation in which you're allowed to sleep only 6 hours per night, because as everyone knows, you can substitute sleep with meditation, you feel as if you're floating. You're floating above your day-to-day life, your colleagues and your friends who live a normal mainstream life. They are simply not as deep as you, not as disciplined. It's not your fault that they can't understand your mindset, that they say you're arrogant. In reality, they are just jealous. You're simply a better person. Guys, I know you think that I am exaggerating, and I wish I was, but as a yoga teacher, this was my reality. Of course, not all yogis have this mindset, but I have met a good amount of teachers as well as students that had this arrogant and elitist idea of yoga and their own lifestyle. You can't imagine how bitchy and pretentious these peaceful yogis can be. And this is how I would describe the yoga world until 2020. Extreme, elitist, arrogant, eating disordered, and very expensive. Then a change happened, and luckily I had left this yoga community already in 2019. So I saw these changes only from an outside perspective. The pandemic fundamentally changed our day-to-day lives. Face masks, contact restrictions, fear of illness and vaccines became our new reality. For an arrogant, elitist group of people that is so preoccupied with their own health, who feel that they are above conventional medicine, all this was a personal insult. Because if you eat vegan, fast regularly, sweat daily and meditate, you have full control over your immune system and your health. Your own vibration is simply so high that a virus can't affect you. And in no case you would contaminate your sacred body with a vaccination. The world of yoga and everything that is connected to it slipped into the conspiracy scene. And suddenly these peaceful hippies were not that peaceful anymore. Everything that is fundamentally good about the wellness scene, the focus on a healthy lifestyle as well as self-responsibility, unfortunately are a perfect breeding ground for anti-scientific beliefs. And brands have understood how profitable that is and further promoted disinformation with their products, like cookbooks, juice cleansers, and so on. And gurus and healers that are so popular in this world have the answer to everything. They know how to eat right, how to prevent diseases, and how to become enlightened. Scientists, of course, they are all bought by the evil pharma industry. If someone already tends towards this attitude, it is not a big step towards conspiracy ideology. Suddenly, the pharma industry is not only greedy, but also part of a global plan. Suddenly, ideas of a new world order and population exchange make a lot of sense. And suddenly, vaccines are a tool to reduce the population. And suddenly, you have to fight back against the elites, George Soros, and Bill Gates. I think the worst about all this is that understandable fears in a time of crisis have been used and reinforced to profit from them. Because conspiracies are also a very lucrative business model. I said it in another podcast episode before, if you want to make money and you don't care about scamming people, you should really open a health business and profit from people's fears. I already spoke about the closeness of alternative medicine, spirituality, and conspirational ideologies, and I don't want to focus on that now, but I want to warn you to be a little bit careful when you go into this world. But okay, I got very specific now. There are further problems with the yoga and wellness industry. I already talked about how capitalist and consumption-oriented it is. Everything in relation to wellness is extremely expensive. Yoga clothes, scented candles, teas, retreats, but also classes are financially not manageable with a middle-class income. But that's the point, actually. Well-being is restricted to a very distinct group of people, the white upper class. Body and fat shaming are another problem. there's very little diversity in this industry. Of course, brands now use different body shapes for marketing, but we all know that this is simply performative. Furthermore, the right diet plays a huge role in this world. Sacrifice and discipline are seen as desirable, and eating meat, wheat, gluten, and the consumption of alcohol are seen as pure poison. If someone eats these kind of unhealthy foods, being overweight is their own fault. The body ideal of this world is extremely toxic and has nothing to do with well-being or healthy diet. But those who market this lifestyle pretend as if it was the one and only way to untouchable health. And if you unpack this, the conclusion is, if anyone is sick, it is the person's own fault. Cancer? You should have eaten healthier. Depression? You should have meditated more. Your chakras are blocked because you eat meat. Your body is polluted by heavy metals because you got vaccinated. This movement is extremely ableistic and discriminatory towards disease. And what is even worse? Vulnerable people are getting unrealistic promises of healing. People who are confronted with a diagnosis very often look for ways to improve their own health and their situation. They want to participate in their own healing. Unfortunately, they very often hear from this toxic yoga and wellness world that their illness is their own fault, that they carry the responsibility for it, because they did not release hidden trauma or because they ate meat. And when you're already vulnerable, either because you are in despair over a disease or maybe because you have an unstable psyche right now, of course one tries everything to feel better. And so those people who actually need protection are easily scammed by false promises and pay huge amounts of money to try different healing methods. All of this is reprehensible, but unfortunately, this is absolute normality in this world, and that's why I speak out about it. I already criticized this movement a lot, and I think I pointed out the toxicity of this world quite well, but I have one more point that I want to touch on. What this industry also likes to do is to appropriate other cultures and to alternate their practices to make it fit for Western customers and profit of them. Now, I'm not an expert on the topic of cultural appropriation, so I won't drag this topic too long, but yoga, for example, is often criticized because it is a traditional cultural and spiritual Indian practice that has become a sport and a product of consumption in the West, without giving any respect towards its origins. And by respect, I don't mean putting Hinduistic figures in your yoga studio or lighting incense sticks. As I said, I'm not an expert on that topic, but I find it important to mention. Now, I have painted a horrific picture of the entire wellness and yoga industry, but why are these trends so popular at all? And why does their popularity not decrease? If you look at Instagram and TikTok, you will find more and more lifestyle influencers with perfect white skinny bodies showing us green smoothies, juice fasts, Pilates workouts, and a 10-step skincare routine at 5 o'clock in the morning. In 2021, the so-called that girl trend was one of the most popular trends on social media. It is about young women performing specific routines as waking up super early, Pilates, running a healthy diet that is incredibly restrictive to maximize their productivity and outward beauty. The lifestyle that is portrayed is absolutely impossible to keep up with, especially for anyone who is working. But why do we want to see this content? And what need stands behind all these wellness activities? So first of all, I think that it is clear by now that this so-called wellness movement has actually nothing to do with well-being anymore. Instead, it pressures people and makes them feel worse about themselves because it leads to more comparison and towards running after some ideals of health that simply don't exist. I think one of the reasons why people fall for this is because they actually don't feel good. Because something is missing in their life. Self-help books about being more mindful, happy, stoic, healthy, and productive are also extremely popular. The wish to work on oneself and to change something seems to be very big, and I don't want to demonize that or make fun of it because I believe that getting to know yourself and to lead a healthy lifestyle are amazing. But as soon as this is used for business, it becomes difficult. And I don't mean that services or products should not be rewarded or paid. Of course, yoga teachers or osteopaths, for example, deserve to make their money. But always running after the next diet, the next product, or the next trend will not help to feel better. Instead, it is really easy to get lost in this world and to lose a lot of money. When I think about all these topics and when I talk about them with my patients, I always get to the same conclusions. There's always a deep insecurity behind this. Am I good the way I am? Am I right? Combined with a sense of maybe not knowing who you actually are. It is absolutely normal to ask yourself these questions, and they are part of being an adult. But they also make us a little bit vulnerable. Because when I don't know what is important to me, what I need and who I am, predetermined answers are very welcome. And then it is extremely easy to get sucked into this world of wellness, yoga and self-help. And then you start following any tips and ideas, hoping that by doing so, you will like yourself a little bit more. All in all, of course, I don't want to demonize this entire scene. I know some great yoga teachers who are very grounded and put all their heart into their work, who want only the best for their clients. And of course, not everyone in this scene is as toxic as I portrayed them in this episode. But this shadow side exists, and most likely the world of wellness will simply just not keep its promise, well-being. That's why I encourage you to be a bit careful with yourself and expose yourself to this world only in small doses that don't make you go insane. As soon as you notice that this world is pressuring you more than helping you, you need to be aware of that and protect yourself from it. I hope this episode gave you some new thoughts and ideas to think about. If you enjoyed this episode, you can follow this podcast and give it a good review. By that, you help me to reach even more people with my content. And if you want to get in contact with me, you will find a link in the episode description. I'm always happy to hear from you. Bye.